ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Here is Salajeta. Oh, great save again by Slaughter.
It's a huge save.
Wonderful save.
It's as big as we've ever seen under pressure. It's the sort of heart that you need to make World Cups. Mark Slaughter, you are a champion.
When it comes to all-time Socceroos, they don't get much bigger, figuratively or literally, than Mark Slaughter. And when it's a World Cup, well, that is big. And so you need the big guns. Today is episode one of our World Cup special that is going to run all tournament long. Mark Slaughter is lending us his experience, the brains, the insights, the lot. We're riding this roller coaster all the way to the final, and Mark is going to be shotgun in the front with us. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. There's nothing quite like a football World Cup. Mark Slaughter has been to not one, but two of them. 109 caps for the Socceroos, if you don't mind. He's scaled the heights of the Premier League. He'll be on the ground in the USA covering what is the biggest sport event on earth. And he's going to share his insights with us. Mark, welcome. On the eve of a World Cup, just take us back to the nerves of your first 20 years on. Is there something that stands out from that 06 edition?
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I mean, for us back in Germany, we were preparing for the tournament outside of Germany. So you're very, very clear. We're in the Netherlands, and then we made our way across. So you're a little bit out of it. So you're kind of like, you obviously know how tense things are. Everybody's, you know, you're working your socks off. Everyone's trying to fine tune things. People are trying to maneuver for positioning. The manager's playing games, mind games with people, certainly in our case back in 2006. So there was a real edginess about it all the time as well. And obviously you're dealing with like fatigue, mental fatigue, physical fatigue, because you need to get all this work into your legs and in your body before the World Cup. And then I think the realization for me and for a lot of us was the minute you arrive in Germany, because that's where it was happening. That's where you felt like we're at a World Cup. The pressure is now a lot more intense, a lot more eyes are on you, and you're right, this is real now.
It's getting very real for the Australians. What an event that is coming up for them. And the United States is so central to this tournament. They are the co-hosts, and maybe the biggest talking point from an Australian perspective leading into this tournament has been the second game in the United States. I mean, the Yanks, Mark, they've talked some smack. Alexi Lalas, Landon Donovan. But people would have seen you confronting one American, Mike Grella, over his claim that Australia represented a layup.
The United States will play Australia in Seattle, boys. Grella, how's that?
Layup for the US.
I was drawn to your comments, and what I liked about it was the way you drove into the mix of experience and youth in the Australian squad. And I want to hit that in a moment. But first of all, it felt great seeing an Australian standing up for Australia on that global stage. How did it feel for you to be the one doing the standing up?
Well, I mean, that just took it in my stride. I was made aware of what was coming at me 30 seconds before we went live on air. So I was doing an engagement for the EFL. Middlesbrough were playing a playoff final against Hull at Wembley, and part of the coverage, CBS were doing a live pitch side hit. And then I was asked to do it. And I said, yeah, absolutely. I'm there working for the EFL. I'm happy to do it. And then literally 30 seconds before I go on air, they go, by the way, these are the guys on CBS are going, we're going to show this clip. This is what he said. He's standing right next to you. I went, sure, go for it. And unfortunately, I couldn't actually hear what he was saying there on the ground. And they said, they explained to me what it was. I went, okay, fine. And then I was kind of put in a precarious position, I suppose, in one way, or put on a bit of pressure, and I just thought, typical, that doesn't surprise me. I've heard a lot of the talk leading up to it, in and around it. I mean, look, these days in media, there are people out there just trying to get clicks. The more extreme your view is, the more support you get, and the more often you get opportunities to work within this industry. So you've got to try and set yourself apart from the rest. Well, certainly some people believe that. And I think in America, that seems to be the way that a lot of these pundits, if you want to call them, operate. So in that sense, it wasn't a surprise. But then he tried to defend himself, and the hole was just getting bigger.
No, but I'm not backing down. I will say, you guys probably thought we're the easiest pot in the team in group two, and we thought you guys are the easiest pot in, team in pot two. So I think it makes a lot of sense why that gained traction, because we're probably both the weakest team.
I know that you've had a lot of time to think about your answer, your reply, so yep. I get your angle you're going at, but no. I don't think we ever thought that. Host nation is always very difficult to play against in any World Cup. So we always knew that the USA is going to be a tough, tough opponent. What we like to do is let our performances do the talking.
We believe in our ability. We're quietly confident about the way we can play football and what we can do with. And I don't see it any differently. So it was a pretty easy one for me to confront and to also give my response to.
Are you saying that the Americans talk too much and you're more action? Is that what you said?
Well,
that's what I
leave it to interpretation. And Troy, you're probably not far off what I mean in that message somewhere along the way, but I'm not going to say it.
It's just typical of a lot of people. You know, like, people continuously write us off. We've had it all the time. Australia always gets written off. And it's great in some ways, because I think that's also what we like the most. And we often really like surprise people and outperform what most people expect from us. Look, last World Cup was a great example. I even personally thought that we were going to struggle even to win any games, let alone we win two group games in our group, keep two clean sheets. We broke records after records in terms of our appearances at World Cups, and the way the team performed was outstanding. So when our backs are truly against the wall, that's often when we come out fighting and we play our best football. So I was never concerned about the comments, and I'm fine with people making those comments. It's interesting when you confront people with them and the way in which they try and defend their comments. But from our perspective, I feel like it's unbelievably good ammunition for the players. Also a good reminder of what they're coming up against, how bolshy people are, what they think of the Australian national team. And it just gives you that little bit of extra incentive to rub it a little bit more in their face.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to one, you talk about the fuel aspect. I was talking to one senior player off record, and he was just saying that the group already, this was months ago when the draw came out, were buzzing for that particular fixture. Do you feel like, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves because it's game two, but that could really define the tournament in many ways for Australia?
Yeah, there's so many different scenarios, isn't it? Because the first game against Turkey obviously is the most important game. That can define the way in which your tournament plays out in front of you. You get a good result in that first game, it sets you up very, very nicely. And then the next game that's pivotal is that second game. I feel that, and it's a bit cliche, but it's actually genuinely true. A little bit less in this World Cup because there's so many more teams and there's an opportunity for a third place teams to qualify through the knockout stages. But the first game is for me, the most important game because it's the first game. And then the second game becomes the most important game. So every one of the games is so really vitally important. And every time we've been at a World Cup, every one of our games have been pivotal, whether it's the first one, second or third one, for various reasons. And I don't see this being any different whatsoever. Turkey is going to be a tough game, a really tough game. They've got some really good players. They qualified through the playoffs. Fortunately, in some ways, didn't play necessarily their best football, but they're qualified. And so the rest is history. Now it's about what you do and how you perform in a World Cup. Playing the USA as the second game, playing the USA in any game is going to be tough. Any host nation is a really, really difficult opponent. So I think when Popper was interviewed post the draw, it was more about that excitement of playing a host nation. And yes, you could have been drawn against far more difficult opponents than the USA, but it's still a really, really tough opponent. And I think the fact that so many more eyes and ears will be on that game because you're playing the US on home soil at home World Cup. So that's also what makes it magical. It's the same as if you would have drawn against Mexico or you're drawn against Canada. Those games are standout games for you because you're playing a host nation.
Let's get into the Socceroos analysis. I mean, so much focus, I think, from Australian football fans has been around Toure and Iran Kunda, just the highlight reels. They're intoxicating. Popovich has at times looked like he prefers to use Toure as a starter and then bring Nestor off the bench. Do you feel like they could and should be playing from the outset together, or how do you sort of weigh that up?
Look, there's a real balance, right? So it's a balance between your strengths and weaknesses in a side, trying to find a balance throughout the whole of the pitch. Toure has shown in a very short period of time the step up to coming into the championship in the UK. He's done seamlessly, effortlessly, and has really performed well. Yes, unfortunately, he picked up an injury, and his stats probably would have been even more impressive had he not picked up the injury. And I think as an out-and-out big striker, like a target man, an ability to hold balls up, to allow our players to get back up in support, he kind of fits that bill.
The little ball is poked through towards Mo Toure. Great strength, great finish. Mo Toure, who had plenty to do, but he did it with aplomb to open his international account.
He fits that, and he's got the ability to score goals. And I think Iran Kunda, that excitement the energy, the pace, the trickery, the unpredictability is quality. And there is always a balance between whether you start with someone like Erin Kunda, how much of influence does he have right from the start, or is his impact on games more and greater as you introduce him? As players are slightly slowing down a little bit, slightly a little bit more fatigue comes into it, a player comes in with so much energy, so much hype, and can really disrupt oppositions. And I see Popper sticking with playing just Toure and then bringing on Erin Kunda as that impact player. There might be a period of time where he actually will start him. There might be after the first group game, maybe after the second group game, if there's a need to try and chase something, to try and do something, you might look at trying to be a little bit more attack-orientated, a little bit more top-heavy. But with today's football and the way the Socceroos are going to have to play, and we've seen it in the warm-up games, that as a team, you have to. Everybody has to play their part. Everybody has to defend. Everyone has to work really, really hard. That's a given. And it's not to say that Erin Kunda doesn't do that, but it's not necessarily his strengths. So you need to find a balance between having the players on the pitch that can go forward, but also equally can help out defending quite a bit. And you know, you look at our side and overall, and you go, look, technically we are a good side. Are we as good as other teams? No, but we've got other elements that are strengths for us that we're going to have to play on. And I think Popper naturally is about solid defense, work rate, intensity, picking your moments. We've seen it through the qualifiers. We've seen it now in the warm-up games. And I think that won't change.
You talk about defense there, and I think, you know, obviously I'm drawn to the highlight reel of the two guys that we just spoke to, but maybe the other end of the park is even more talented when you think about Chakwadze, Boss, Harrington, emerging, exciting young talent. Who excites you most across the entire Socceroos group that you feel like is about to have a potentially breakout tournament for the Socceroos?
Look, I think Jordy Boss is probably the one that stands out the most in terms of, you know, he's got that defending quality, but also that the ability to get forward, influence games. Whether it's providing assists, scoring goals. We've seen in this relatively short period of time where he's really emerged as a really important player. How well he's done in the Dutch Eredivisie. He's really come to his own. I'd be very, very surprised if he's still there come the end of this World Cup. I see this as a real breakthrough opportunity for him.
As well as Jordy Boss into the area. Boss still going. It's a great run and it's a goal. Jordy Boss. Well, he is in fantastic form at club level with Feyenoord, and it's the old rope-a-dope again from the Socceroos.
Alessandro Chicati is a really exciting player as well. He's playing week in, week out in Serie A. I mean, the exciting bit for me is that there's these really young players like Chicati, like Jordy Boss, who are breaking through. They're playing at high levels, and we haven't had enough of those players. And there's no disrespect to the players that we've had. And recently, it's about just that level of players that really excites me. Really talented young players playing at a really high level, learning their trade against some of the best players in the world, and now hopefully making that next step up. You know, the way that our national team can improve is having that something special, having that individual brilliance in a side, more experience, playing at a high level, coming up against more difficult opponents week in, week out to improve as an individual as well. And these guys are being exposed to it. Lucas Harrington's another really exciting player for me that I saw during the FIFA series in March. That was the first time I got a chance to see him play. I thought he was really, really good, really assured, confident, didn't look for a second out of place. And Tony Popovich talked about that. That's why he played him in that first game and said, I saw him at training. I spoke to Popper about it. He goes, I saw him in training that first day. He goes, the day you were there. And I go, yeah, I saw him as well. And he goes, he just looked like he'd been training with the Socceroos forever. And the pace and the intensity of Popper's sessions for a lot of players has taken time to adjust. But for him, it's just like he's taken it in his stride. And he's another player where I believe that if all goes to plan and not trying to put too much pressure on these guys, is that this is their massive opportunity to break through. And we're getting to a point where you're getting groups of players now coming through and hopefully making that next big step up to a higher level.
You mentioned the intensity of a Popovich-led team, and it was fascinating to me to hear Christian Volpato speak to this. It's hard to think of many bigger Australian World Cup selection stories than him being rushed in. To hear him speak about kind of being shocked by the quality of the setup, and I think he used the term sort of real coach around Tony Popovich. The selection and his reaction, did the whole sort of episode surprise you at all?
I suppose it's more, the surprise was more about Volpato then deciding he wants to play for Australia, because it seemed like he hadn't made his mind up. He was unsure about what he wanted to do, and therefore that kind of was done. I think the surprise was more about, okay, he's made that decision. And like, once he makes that decision, that's obviously a major decision. It's irreversible, right? So I know there's been a lot of criticism, a lot of people upset with him being included, saying that he doesn't deserve to be. He's had opportunities in the past and he's turned us down. I'm of a different view of that. Look, the guy's a young kid and there's a lot of things being thrown at him. And there is also internally within your club in Italy, he would have had a lot of pressure on him. Clubs don't want players to play for Australia necessarily because of the travel that's involved in it. It's an enormous commitment. And clubs would much prefer you to play for a European team because the distances in which you travel is far less, and it's a lot more manageable for players and clubs to deal with. And of course, you know, the stature element of it, you know, Volpato playing for Italy as opposed to playing for Australia for his club would carry a lot more weight in their own eyes. So I believe Christian's probably had a lot to deal with, but he's come out and he's completely committed, and he's always said that, like, it's been a massive decision and it's been a difficult decision. But not for the reason being that he doesn't feel Australian. It's more about just the magnitude of a decision. It's people find it difficult to comprehend how big a decision that is. I've seen players in the past, other Australians in the past, having dual nationality and not, you know, playing for other nations at junior level, but then making a decision to play for the Socceroos. They're big, major decisions in your life. And I've always said to guys that I've come across in that scenario that the decision has to be based on what you truly feel. What does it mean for you to stand there and listen to a national anthem? Does the Australian national anthem mean anything to you? Or does, in this case, Christian, does the Italian national anthem mean anything to him? How much does it mean for him? And for me, it was like no other national anthem meant anything other than the Australian one. You know, I grew up with a German background, and yes, I'm very proud of my German heritage, but first and foremost, I feel very, very Australian. I also felt, I class myself in a lot of ways also very European, but that doesn't detract and take away from the fact that I'm Australian and I loved every moment of playing for Australia. And would I have loved to play another 100 games for Australia? Absolutely. I mean, it's the best feeling in the world. So Christian has made that decision, and it's now about what he does with this chance. How does he respect the shirt? What does he do with his opportunity? How much passion, how much determination, how much desire does he show moving forward? That's where he needs to be judged, in my opinion.
The final minute of the 45, Volpato to deliver. It's a good ball towards Suter at the back post.
Tony Popovich, you went to a World Cup with the manager. We sort of, from the outside looking in, hear about him being such a fierce competitor. He plays his cards pretty close to his chest in terms of dealing with the media. As someone who knows him, from a leadership perspective, is there something that maybe isn't obvious from the outside looking in that sort of sums up who Tony Popovich is?
I think he's pretty much what you see is what you get. I think he's more of a no-nonsense. I think, and then you said that within his interviews, you know, like he talked about the whole, you know, if we're talking about Christian Volpato and about the whole idea of playing for the national team and trying to convince a player, because I'm not there to convince anyone. It's about wanting to play for the shirt, wanting to play for his country. You referred to before about Christian Volpato being shocked about the quality, the level. I think that is a credit to Popper. The attitude, the environment that he's created since he's come in has elevated the Socceroos to the levels that a lot of guys are expecting and have seen regularly. I also, in my experience of my career, is that there are very few periods of time in my career where I've been at clubs where the level of intensity at training sessions is of that elite level. So when I say that, I mean the type of training sessions, the intensities of training sessions were like 85 to 90% of match day intensities. So you're not necessarily training for long periods of time, you're short, sharp, time period to time, but the intensity is of a different level altogether. And, you know, having been back in Australia in March and seeing the Socceroos train, I saw that. And the players, I spoke to a lot of players about it, and over time I've spoken to a few of the players, and they talk about that intensity, about feeling on edge in the national team, coming in, no one quite knowing 100% whether they're starting or not starting. There is a balance, and I think there's also push players, and I think Matty Ryan's a really good example. Matty Ryan, when Popper first took over, there was an uncertainty as to whether Matty Ryan was going to be the number one for Australia or not. He was left out of games. And I think what's key is that it's actually helped Matty massively, I believe, because it was also his attitude. So Matty's attitude was, okay, there's no doubt he would have been upset. There's no doubt whatsoever he would have been frustrated. But it's what do you do with it? How do you respond to it? And Matty's rolled his sleeves up, worked harder, found his place, you know, went to Levante, played. I think he's playing his best football in his whole career right now. So he's taken the challenge and he's the captain. And that's a great example for all his teammates to see that you put under pressure, you are in doubt about your position. However, what do you do about it? How are you going to deal with it? What approach do you take going forward? And I think that that sort of attitude and mentality has been created by Popper. And that's, it's the same as when I see him do his interviews. There's a no nonsense. It's very, he's very clear in his messaging. He knows what he wants. He knows what he expects from his players and he's drawn the line. And I think his coaching staff are really all on board on it. We've got a first time ever, a full coaching staff are all ex-Socceroos. Coaching staff that know what it means to play for the Socceroos, what sacrifices there are, how difficult it is for the travel, the jet lag, all those elements of it. And I'm not saying that that's the problem, a problem. What I'm saying is that understanding what players go through, that is really key. Because we all desperately want to play for the national team. And every single one of those players are desperately wanting to be part of the national team setup. And that's what you want. You want players, and I've seen far too many national teams in the past where players don't want to be selected. They're hoping they're not going to be selected because they want to spend their summer with their families. They don't want to go on the national team. My experience with the national team and the Socceroos has always been the desperate demands and desires for players to play for the national team. And we've seen it continue. And Popper now, I think, has re-emphasized it and created a slightly more of an intense environment than we've had in the past.
Turkey first up, it looms as a doozy. Arda Güler, Kenan Yıldız, scary, Schwartz. I just wanted to know, from what we've seen against Mexico and Switzerland as potential test case, we've really sat back, haven't had a lot of possession. If you're looking and forecasting for that Turkey clash, is that what we're going to see from this Tony Popovich outfit, would you expect?
Well, we've seen it in both those games. So against Mexico and against Switzerland, they're very much... The cliche, a game of two halves. They were both unbelievable examples of literally two different types of 45 minutes in each of those games. And I think to a large degree, we're probably going to see a lot more of the same. I don't see much changing. Like, you know, you're playing against a team in Turkey who have got those quality players in Güler, Yıldız as an example, and the likes of some others. They're going to be technically very, very strong. They will want to dictate possession. They will try and take control of the game. And they'll want to try and, get into a position where they're dominating the game. For Australia, in large parts of it, it's going to be about managing that, managing the times out of possession, being very difficult to break down, making it very difficult for the opponent to take control of the game. And I think we've shown that in the last two games that we've done that. Against Mexico, I think we're unfortunate not to get a result. Yes, the possession base in the first 45 minutes is not great. And the question will be when you come up against the top, top quality opponents, and maybe Turkey will be one of those ones where you have to be careful about giving them too much possession. But I think the work rate, the fitness of this side, the work rate, the determination, the organization is really key. And I think we've seen that so far in these two games. And also second half performances have always shown that we've been prepared to commit players forward. To attack teams, we've got the quality to do so.
A little bit more direct. That's a fantastic ball. Flag down. Connor Metcalf, square ball for Yenge. Goal on debut for the Socceroos. And their bright start to the second half rewarded.
I suppose that a lot of people, what we want to see is a little bit more of a balancing out of the two. A little bit more of that front-footedness in the first half. And not just save it for the second half, where sometimes if you're unlucky, you might find yourself almost out of the game by the second half.
Just when you look at this group, as you said, things can go right, things can go wrong. What's the best case? What's the worst case for the Socceroos?
Look, I think first game is getting a result, so not losing that first game. And if you do lose that first game, it's about maintaining or minimizing the damage. You know, 2010, we lost our first game against Germany 4-0, and that literally... is an incredibly difficult mountain to climb. We showed that 2010, we finished on the same points as we did in 2006. 2006, that got us through second and through the knockout stages. In 2010, the goal difference killed us. So it's about staying in it. Like I said earlier on in the podcast, is that the fact that there are the third best teams in some of the groups will go through. So there is a little bit more opportunities to get through, but you want to be assured of that position sooner rather than later. So if you can do it after your first two games, that's the best scenario to be in. So hopefully we can get a good result against Turkey in the first game. The USA can go either way because of the nature of it. Home nation, there's going to be extra intensity. The last time they played each other, there was a feisty event as well. There's going to be, I believe, that feistiness in this game again because of what's been said, how the lead up's been. And the USA have got a point to prove constantly. We're going to have to be at our best at every single one of the games. I think one of our best case scenarios is, obviously the best case scenario is finishing first, but I think we're a good chance for finishing second, but third is not the end of the world. And I think qualification through the knockout stages is just the thing for me that's, you know, that obviously the number one priority. And I believe that we're good enough to do that at the very least.
So exciting. Mark Schwartz is going to be back tomorrow to talk about all the storylines that are not Australia. Mark, thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
How good is Mark Schwartzer? As I say, he's going to be part of our team for the entire FIFA Football World Cup here on ABC Sport Daily and our World Cup special. You can follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Catch you tomorrow. I'm Patrick Stack, and this is ABC Sport Daily World Cup special, produced by Declan Byrne. Thanks to Football Australia and Paramount Plus for the extra audio used in this episode.